This episode of Film Scene is being brought to you by our new Zazzle store. For logoed shirts, mugs, and stickers, go to zazzle.com/filmscene.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Welcome to Film Scene, the podcast for movie fans by movie fans. I'm your host, Tim Gordon, and joining me today is co-host Karen Gordon.
Hi.
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 Today we're going to continue our discussion of the American Film Institute 100 Years, 100 Movies list, and we are at number 96, so we will be discussing John Ford's The Searchers. This movie came out in 1956 and stars John Wayne, Jeffrey Hunter, Vera Miles, Ward Bond, and Natalie Wood.
Yes, it does.
Obviously, a Western.
Why do you say obviously a Western? Those people have made other films.
John Ford, John Wayne.
And?
Well, I don't know that they ever made anything but a Western together.
Okay, I could see that.
This side of The Quiet Man, anyway.
I was going to say, they did The Quiet Man.
So, TCM's synopsis of this is, an Indian-hating Civil War veteran tracks down the tribe that slaughtered his family and kidnapped his niece.
Pretty simplistic, but I think fair.
That hit all the bases?
Hit all the bases for me.
So I'm going to go through a few of the plot points here. Not too in-depth, but there probably will be spoilers. And feel free to jump in as we go along here, Karen.
I'll try.
So the movie starts out with Ethan Edwards, played by John Wayne, returning to his brother's home and his brother's family after the Civil War. And they kind of make it a mystery as to where he's been and what he's been up to. They kind of make it seem like something criminal maybe has been going on, but they never go into too great of detail about it.
Well, he does give the medal to young Debbie, his niece, pretty early on, and there's speculation that would be from, you know, fighting, you know, against Mexicans.
Oh, and I thought it was a Civil War medal.
Interesting.
No?
No, but they do leave it up in the air.
And he does have several bags full of gold pieces that seem to be brand new that no one can quite place where they came from.
Yeah.
And they make reference to him never having gone to the surrender because he was on the South.
Yes, he was a Confederate.
So, at some point, not too far into the movie, there's an Indian attack on his brother's house, and everyone is killed there except the two girls, Lucy and Debbie, the two daughters of his brother.
Is that totally true?
Is what totally true?
Well, not both of them survived. Are you getting to that later?
Well, they both survived the initial attack.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Yeah, at this house was his brother, his brother's wife, and they had three kids. The oldest was Lucy, a girl, obviously. The middle child is a boy. And then the youngest is Debbie, another girl. They never really say much about the poor nephew.
Yeah. Not much there.
Also living with them is...
Well, they imply that he was orphaned and taken in and...
No. The youngest boy. See, you forgot that he even existed.
I did. I thought you were talking about Martin.
No, I was just going to bring him up. Oh. Also living with them is Martin Pauley, played by Jeffrey Hunter, who, as he says, is 1/8 Cherokee or something to that effect. But, you could tell that Ethan doesn't think too highly of him because he can tell that he has some Indian blood in him.
Well, I mean, you get to know the character. You find out that he's almost functionally illiterate.
Well, everyone's kind of... backwoods.
I mean, he's clearly not the brightest bulb here for the family.
We find out that Martin and apparently his own family was killed by Indians as well. So that's why he was an orphan child.
Gotcha.
So there's a quest to locate the two girls. And it starts out with sort of a large group of Texas Rangers, pseudo-Texas Rangers, led by Ward Bond's character. Reverend Captain Samuel Johnson Clayton. It's a little too many names.
He's accomplished.
But they get themselves into a little bit of a scuffle with the Indians, and it's decided that Ethan would go out and look for these girls on his own. But Martin decides he's going to go along too. I think part of this is because he has nothing else to do, right, at this point?
Well, I thought he felt loyalty.
Well,
he
yeah.
Felt that was his sister.
Right, and he does look at them all as his own family.
Although Ethan makes it quite clear that they're not.
Right.
He's a real ass.
This is true. And also going with them is Lucy's fiancé, I guess you would say. His name is Brad Jorgensen, and that's played by Harry Carey Jr., not the announcer.
No.
So again, we're going to hit some spoilers here, but at one point, Ethan finds the body of Lucy. And when her fiancé finds out about this, he goes a little nuts and rides down on his own into the Indian village and is killed himself.
Yes.
All through this movie, there's implications of rape, right? Did you catch it?
I guess.
But they don't out and out say it, I guess,
because
of the time period of when this was made. But I wonder if that was a real thing in that time period, or if that was more of a 1950s thing.
Well, yeah, the fact that they're referring to them as Indians in this time and are playing up to the stereotype of, you know, those dangerous Indians are going to kill everybody, when in fact we're really intruding on their land, is never mentioned. So I think there's a real simplistic, one-sided view of the whole thing going on. So to even bring rape into it, I mean, you just assume they were up to no good and needed to be stopped by John Wayne.
On the other hand, they did come in and kill everyone, so.
They did, but why? Again, you know, it's, yeah, it's a very American view you have. Is this why it's on the AFI list? The slaughter of Native Americans and us being self-righteous and acting like it's the other way around?
So within the course of the movie, as Ethan and Martin continue to look for Debbie and they find out this Indian chief is named Scar that has captured her, a lot of time passes. And I think they do a couple of subtle and not so subtle things to show that this time passes. One is this lengthy letter that Martin has written back to his girl, played by Vera Miles, that kind of recounts some of what they'd gone through. The other is this thing where they sort of have John Wayne's hair go gray a little bit, just at the temples, to make him look a little older.
And see, I don't... Yeah, there's like no passage of time in this for me. Unless they said, it's been since Christmas since
well, yeah,
we heard
they,
from him last.
They do a lot of that, you know? Too.
Yeah, they kind of hit you over the head with it. But everyone looks exactly the same, except obviously Natalie Wood's character.
What's happened since I saw you last year?
Yes.
So they find out that Debbie is still alive. And they have an encounter with her, dressed like one of the Indians and living with them, seemingly no longer a hostage, just living there, right? And Martin and we as the audience realize at some point that Ethan Edwards, the John Wayne character, seems like he would rather kill Debbie than have her live life that way.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Martin, on the other hand, wants to bring her home. Neither of them want to just leave her in peace and let her live how she is.
Well, and her character gives mixed signals about what the point is. She makes the reference that these are my people now, but at the same time, she seems somewhat relieved when she finally is rescued.
Right.
There's a real mixed message going on here.
She kind of seems like, at first, that she doesn't even remember that other life, even though she's supposed to be 12 or so.
True.
So, a minute.
It's one of those side stories that just I felt like didn't need to be there, and it almost made the film campy.
Well, to me, it seems like there's a lot of times when they flash back to this their old life in this. It's not even a town; it's just a collective of people, basically, and they will return and then leave again from these people. And I'm not sure if that's to kind of give a like a sense of home that they still have to go to, or really the only semblance of family that Martin has left, or what the deal is. But for some reason, this girl seems to be nuts for him, and he doesn't seem to notice or care at first.
Yeah, I mean, he seems kind of lunkheaded anyway.
Well, and then she is courted by this other guy, played by Ken Curtis, who later went on to play Festus on Gunsmoke.
Didn't know that.
That's his big claim to fame.
Ah.
But he's in a lot of these John Ford movies, too. Consequently, he was John Ford's son-in-law, so...
Probably, that worked out.
Probably not a tough casting choice
probably
there.
Probably not, no.
But, you know, eventually this Laurie character decides to marry the wrong man, or who we're supposed to think is the wrong man, and then seems delighted when these two guys are fighting over her.
Yeah, that was the campy part I didn't like. Yeah, just kind of vapid and...
I think all these John Ford movies have a little bit of humor here and there. And
that was supposed to be funny.
Sometimes it seems out of place. Well, where they're having a kind of cartoon fight.
It was cartoonish.
Yeah. I think part of that just because they're both guys are such doofuses.
Yes, they are. They definitely upped the doofus factor in this film.
Remember in Highlights magazine, they had Goofus and Gallant?
No.
These are both Goofus.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I don't remember that. That was one of those magazines that was only seemingly at doctor's offices.
Yeah, that's true.
Or at the dentist. There's just such a campiness that Vera Miles and these two guys bring to it that it's like, is this supposed to be a serious film or not? I mean, you've got this serious Ethan Edwards, racist, you know, in a sense, character, and I don't understand how that subplot fits in with it.
Yeah, and again, I don't know if it's just supposed to be like this bit of concrete life that they still have left, even though they're hardly ever there, you know, while they're out searching.
Hence the name?
Probably,
okay.
So
it almost seems like the rest of the town doesn't give a damn.
Well, and
they're just kind of like, well, they'll go do it. Don't worry about it. Jerks.
There's this sense that they don't quite believe that she's still alive, you know. And they're a little too quick to give up on that, I guess.
Hmm.
I want to talk a minute, too, about the relationship between Ethan and Martin. Because he seems to not like Martin. And in a way, Martin looks at him as a little bit of a father figure. And calls him Uncle Ethan, and Ethan always tells him not to call him that. But at the same time, it seems like there is something between them, because they're together so much. You know, if Ethan truly didn't like him, or want him around, he could have stopped him. Don't you think?
I suppose. I mean, I kept reading that, you know, this was supposed to be, or is seen as one of John Wayne's more, you know, complex, developed characters, and there's different subtleties and textures to him, and I'm like, no, I don't see that at all. Like, he's just an ass through 99% of the film. When he's not, it seems so phony. Maybe that's just John Wayne for me, I don't know. But, yeah, Yeah, I don't sense that. I feel like it's really underdeveloped, whatever it is that they have going on. And maybe that's a flaw with the script or just the acting itself, is that you just get this one-sided, you know, work from both of them.
Hmm.
Sorry, I'm a little bit of a harsh critic here, but yeah.
So you don't see that family aspect necessarily.
Well, I can sense that there is, you know, on Martin's behalf, there's like an automatic acceptance of Ethan as family, whereas for Ethan, it's not benefit at all through the entire film. I'm sorry, for Martin's benefit.
Well, he gets him a an Indian bride.
As a joke?
Accidentally.
Yeah. Whom they persecute for about 24 hours.
There are a couple points, though. Like, there's one where when they finally meet Scar, and they're going into the his abode.
It's a teepee.
And Ethan tells him to wait outside for no real reason. And I took that as him kind of looking out for him a little bit.
See, and I took it as complete distrust.
I just saw a couple moments like that that are really small.
I read completely different.
Well, and I don't know that I read it that way the first time that I saw the movie either. So maybe because I've seen it so many times, I'm now seeing small things that aren't really there.
Should you have to watch a movie that many times to see small things that aren't really there, though? Or that maybe you're hoping are there?
Don't know.
I think this film tells us that.
So we do get to the point where there is a rescue and there's a raid on the Indian village, and these Texas Rangers come back into play and basically slaughter the village, it seems like, right?
And we're supposed to be happy about that?
But they do rescue Debbie. And at the end, there's a famous scene where Ethan is chasing her down, seemingly to kill her, right? And he picks her up and lifts her up in the exact same way that he had done at the beginning of the movie when she was a little girl. And he tells her, you know, basically it's time to come home, and holds her and takes her home.
I found this to have a very unsatisfying ending.
Would you rather he killed her?
Well, I mean, no, not at all. But it's just like, okay, we're here. And then they shut the door. Like, really? That's it? You haven't seen her for this long? And there's no, I don't know. I guess it's not the search and rescue so much as the searchers. I mean, that's it. Yeah. Look for her. We're done.
They don't even, in the title, it doesn't even say that they find her.
That's true.
They just look for her.
That's true. But yeah, I mean, it's the most unsatisfying ending ever. Because you do. You get that mixed feeling of, is he really happy he found her? I don't know.
Well, and I have a note here about the end shot, which is pretty famous. Actually, there's several times throughout the movie where you're inside a dark dwelling, usually a house, and they open the door, and you can see the great expanse of Monument Valley that they filmed in. And at the end, there's this shot of John Wayne framed in the same kind of doorway, and he turns and walks away by himself, and the door closes, you know, kind of just leaving him on the outs. Up to that point, like Karen said, we get these little pairings of family people taking Debbie in, and Martin sees Lori again, and they come into the house together. And with the John Wayne character, as he's left there by himself, I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
You mean it's more metaphorical that he's always going to be the outsider?
Well, and that, not only that, but
he makes a choice not to be.
That too. Is he turning his back now on this family unit? Does he recognize that he maybe doesn't have a place there anymore?
Well, he's prejudiced as all hell, so
is he just going away to die? Who knows?
Going away to die? Where did you get that from?
Is he just going to completely leave their lives now, or what? We don't know.
Yeah, unsatisfying.
So you touched on it a little bit before, but this movie is ripe with racism.
Yes.
And the Ethan Edwards character is intentionally racist towards Indians. And you can tell that right away when he mentions at the beginning about, he says that the Jeffrey Hunter character could be mistaken for a half-breed. And you can tell that he has disdain for that, just looking like an Indian, you know.
Yeah.
They don't really have any kind of backstory as to why he's like that. And I don't know that it's necessary, exactly.
Was the view in that level of America at the time, you know, based on what he was like?
Well, it doesn't seem like the other people around him are as that bad.
I think they had more fear. Whereas he was kind of a, you know, get the hell out of my backyard kind of a guy.
Well, and there's this point where they find a dead Indian who's been buried and they uncover him.
You mean the one they uncover that's still breathing? Yeah, if you watch close enough, the guy inhales and they lift the rock off.
Well, and I couldn't tell if it was, if that was the case.
He was supposed to be dead and buried, yeah.
Or if his, when they lifted the rock, like he was settling.
No, he was breathing.
So John Wayne's character shoots the Indian's eyes out because according to Indian beliefs, if he doesn't have eyes, he can't go to heaven, basically, right?
Is that a thing, or are they just movie?
Who knows?
Is that movie magic?
But I've heard Martin Scorsese talk about this movie, and he brings up about that scene. He says that, you know, the Ethan Edwards character hates so much that he hates beyond the person's death, even.
Hater.
Don't be a hater.
Don't be a hater. A little too much haterade for him.
So there is the overt racism there, and it kind of talks against that. I mean, it doesn't portray this character as being a hero necessarily. There's also subtle racism of the times that it was shot in.
You mean the 1950s?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where they cast a non-Indian in the lead role.
Yep. Well, and that's one of the funny trivia bits that I found was that it said John Ford intentionally wanted to use Native Americans in these roles, which is pretty unique for the time, but not for the lead role.
Yeah.
So you're good enough to be in my film, but, and by the way, you're not even of the right tribe that we're talking about.
That guy's name was Henry Brandon.
Yes, he was a German-born Jew.
Usually they got the Italians to play the Indian parts.
This is true. There's a good documentary about that. What was the name of it, do you recall?
I don't know.
Yeah, but there was a good documentary about the use of Native Americans in film. Hi, Coco. Our cat wants to say hi.
So I did notice when we watched this recently that they did use a lot of actual Native Americans in the parts.
Yes, they did.
Which I don't know that I picked up on when I've seen this before.
They were Navajos. They were shooting in Monument Valley, which is apparently Navajo territory, and that's, you know, where some of the Navajo things and images, or that was one of the things I read. They weren't Comanche like he was chasing after. They were Navajo, and, you know, I guess if you actually know anything about Native Americans, that's obvious, but considering white people, we don't see that.
So I also wanted to bring up the relationship between Ethan and Martha, his brother's wife, because I think you noticed this.
Yeah,
too.
She had this kind of longing in her eyes at him for something, and I couldn't quite tell if there was supposed to be something there, or if she was just the concerned matriarch.
He for her, too. It wasn't just one-sided.
True, yeah, but nothing's ever verbalized, and if you weren't looking, you'd miss it, I think.
I think that I assume that they maybe used to be a couple before he went to war, and not knowing if he was ever going to come back, she marries the brother instead. But there are at least two different times where, you know, he gives a gentle kiss on her forehead, you know, almost like you would do to a sibling or, you know.
So maybe he just looked out for the family. Maybe that was his role.
But he was more tender with her than anyone else in the family, too.
Well, she was also the only other woman.
True.
You know, who wasn't a child.
So I also have down here about the visuals and the influences mm-hmm. of the visuals. This is shot in Technicolor and VistaVision, so they use the widescreen photography really well. And shot in Monument Valley, like you said. So obviously it's going to look beautiful.
Except, okay, here's my criticism of it.
And they go back and forth between the studio?
You can tell clearly between the valley, a shot all of a sudden is in, you know, a studio. It was, yeah. I think Monument Valley is so beautiful, and that, you know, the shooting done there was so, just did you think you needed to shoot anything in a soundstage?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of pickup type things that they have to do later on. Maybe there's added scenes, who knows. That doesn't bother me as much.
It bothered me in this.
I think a lot of times in these older movies, I don't mind the studio stuff as much anyway. It is weird when they go back and forth, though.
I mean, and I understand there's limits to the technology of the time and what they can and can't do, but it almost ruins how beautiful the natural scenes really are.
And John Ford was always really good about having these big vistas photographed and then not being afraid to put the people in those vistas as little tiny figures moving across them.
Well, and there's the bigger subtext there that we are but tiny.
That's true.
In comparison to the rest of the world.
So some of the fans of this movie include Martin Scorsese, like I said, and Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, who used a lot of the desert type stuff from Tatooine and Star Wars, kind of copying a lot of the stuff that you see in this movie. Especially when Anakin attacks the Tusken Raider village. It's very similar to them attacking the Indian village.
I guess I didn't even think about that.
So, personally, this movie's in my top 10 all-time movies and is my number one Western. And I think it's arguably John Wayne's best performance.
See, and now, does that say something about John Wayne?
Maybe it does. But there's a couple times in this movie where he gives little bits of monologue that are beyond his normal skills.
Well, I guess I see him as such a flat performance in everything he's in. I guess I'm just not one of those people who sees what's so special about it. Because I don't know, it's also always hard for me to separate the person from the role they're playing sometimes. And he comes off as such a right-wing, tight ass. and maybe this is why he's in so many of these, you know, Americana type films, is, you know, he represents one side of this American ideal that I understand why people are attracted to, you know, this patriotic, you know, hard charging tough guy. But at the same time, there's the other side to that, the, you know, racist, misogynistic jerk.
Well, and he's playing...
Maybe it's because I'm a girl. This is where you and I differ when you say, oh, there's no such things as guy movies and girl movies. And I say, yes, there is.
Well, and he's playing a purposely racist character. It's not accidental. I mean, that was part of the character and part of the script. So it wasn't like in some of these other movies where you have the hard-charging hero. Like, for instance, in They Died With Their Boots On, where they try to play Errol Flynn as Custer being on the right side and trying to say that he was for the Indians.
Well, it's hard to root for this anti-hero, though, in John Wayne.
Well, and I don't...
I mean, do you really want him to be... At the end of the day, did you want him to be successful and find Debbie, knowing that she'd be walking back into a white person's world that was so just horrible?
Well, at the same time...
That she'd be okay with him slaughtering other Native Americans.
At the same time, she was taken away from her own family.
True.
Without consent. And her family was killed.
I know. I'm just not big on revenge. I don't. Maybe that's a character flaw in me, that I don't like revenge. It's not going to get you anywhere.
So if you were giving this stars on a 5-star rating, what would you say?
Yes, it's like... I mean, okay, and there are... Like I said before, some production quality issues with this I have, you know. And if you pull up IMDb, there's a lots of like anachronistic goofs and crazy things besides just bad lighting and cutting between sound stages, the whole editing of it. I'd give it a 3.
Wow.
I think there are types of films that appeal to some people more than others, and I am not, you know, not a huge fan of it. I mean, I sit and watch it. I just look at it and go, wow, we're awful human beings. I don't like movies that make me feel like that.
So you don't like any movies?
That's not true. I love Apocalypse Now. I just don't, I don't know. I have issues.
Since it's in my personal top 10, I mean, I would give this 5 stars.
Of course. I was surprised to see that in the revised AFI list from 2007, this one from 96 to 12.
Yeah, that's quite a jump. Although
yeah.
I'm surprised that it's so low in the first place, because It's held in high regard by a lot of people. Not just me.
Maybe for the time. Maybe if I were, you know, around when this came out, I would have more appreciation for it on a big screen.
Well, we saw it on the big screen.
Did I sleep through it?
I don't think
so. This might have been one that I slept through. I've been known to do that. And it's, again, there's some very impressive parts to it, but as a whole, I have issues.
Now, the interesting thing is it's held in high regard, but I don't know that it got any award play that year.
Well, you could say that about, what, most Frank Capra movies, too.
True. There are two rock and roll connections here.
Well, I know the Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
Obviously.
There's a repeated line by Ethan Edwards of, "That'll be the day."
Yes.
And then there's a band.
And how'd that work out for Buddy Holly? Okay in the short term, but...
It was the day.
It was.
And then there's a band called The Searchers from the 60s, so...
This is true.
Did you have any other trivia for The Searchers?
Well, a little bit. I mean, there's some probably standard things. This was one of the first films, it was within the first 25 films that the National Film Registry picked up for the Library of Congress.
See, it's not just me.
No, I mean, and again, if you're looking at purely American filmmaking and American themes, this is a huge part of our history that, and maybe that's it. Maybe I look at it as a bigger thematic problem that we're supposed to root for this guy who's, you know, part of such an ugly chapter of just outright genocide in our country in those early years. I'm going to get off my high horse now and tell you the rest of the trivia. You had mentioned, or had you mentioned, that Lana Wood played the young Debbie?
I did not.
Yes, that is her real life sister, who really is 8 years younger than her, as they used in the film.
And I met once.
Did you really?
I did.
What else has she done since this?
She was a Bond girl.
Was she really?
Yeah.
In which film?
I don't remember. One of the Roger Moore movies, I believe.
Oh, see, and I don't like
him.
Which
is why you don't know.
We'll do a James Bond section at some point. I'm not a fan of him as James Bond either. There's a lot of things I don't like. You really bring out the side of me, Tim. I digress. Imagine either Fess Parker or Robert Wagner as Martin Pauly.
No, thanks. Robert Wagner.
Robert Wagner was a rumor. I would have thought he would have been a bit young, but I guess if Natalie Wood was old enough to be in it as a teenager. Because Martin Pauly, the guy who played Martin Pauly, was almost 30. And he was supposed to be playing the role of an older teen or young 20s.
Okay.
So Robert Wagner probably would have fit the age range a little better. Fess Parker, I thought immediately, too old.
That's true.
But apparently it was offered to Walt Disney, and Walt Disney turned it down without telling Fess Parker.
Right.
And that caused a little bit of angst.
So you had said Jeffrey Hunter plays quite a big doofus.
Yes.
But I think he plays it really well.
I think Fess Parker in style would have been good for that role. In age, I don't know if it would have been believable.
Yeah, because this would have been the same time he was doing Davy Crockett.
So. Yes, which is why he couldn't get out of his Disney contract.
Later on, Jeffrey Hunter played Jesus, so.
Quite a stretch.
I think that was after this and not before. And he also played Captain Pike in the Star Trek pilot. So.
Oh, he did. Interesting.
And then he died in a weird way. So.
Oh, now you leave me wondering.
Like he fell off a ladder and hit his head or something.
Oh, in
like
a
that.
Random way.
Yeah.
Okay. In an accidental random way. You made it sound very, who was the guy in Hogan's Heroes?
Oh, Bob Crane.
Yeah, you made it sound very Bob Crane-like.
No.
Not adapted from a serialized short story. But it was also, but that serialized story, which later was a novel, was based on the true kidnapping of a girl in 1836. So there was some true-to-life elements of this.
Right.
Within, yeah, that story. Now for the weirdness. There's the Ward Bond rumor about how he would walk around naked to get Vera Miles' attention.
It's come up before.
That's a little strange. Even weirder, can you imagine in the 1990s if Terry Gilliam had directed a remake that was set in space starring Bruce Willis and Johnny Depp?
Hmm.
Don't know what they'd be searching for.
Right.
Or if the aliens were suddenly the Native Americans, I don't know. But fortunately, that did not happen.
Hmm. Actually, I could see this being used in different genres. The framework for this, you know.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, they're on a journey. They're seeking to revenge, to find revenge for something, avenging a loved one's death or bad stuff. Yeah, I could see it working. I don't know that I could see it working in space with Terry Gilliam.
That's true.
Yeah. So, and there's a lot of like little, like I mentioned before, anachronistic quirks in here.
Which always happens with these types of movies.
Like the rivets on her jeans. I saw it last night. I'm like, that is not right. That was like a full 5 years before Levi's came up with their riveted jeans.
Well, and I wondered how common it would have been to have a woman wearing jeans in the first place. But who knows?
Yeah, that might have been just a 50s thing that they threw in there. You know, the Native American woman was making the frijoles in an aluminum pan. Also didn't happen in the 1800s. You know, there's the little clips apparently that you can see of people wearing sunglasses and cars in the background and things like that from the set. So
yeah, that would always happen in movies like this where they had to move a large bunch of people into the middle of nowhere to film.
Yeah.
You would always see campers and things if you looked hard enough.
See, and I want to go back and watch it again just to see those things. It will not change my mind about John Wayne and his acting ability, but to see some of those is interesting.
All right. Is that it?
That makes you happy?
I guess so.
Float your boat.
Well, that's going to do it for us, I guess. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to write at film.scene@yahoo.com. And check us out on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/filmscenepodcast. And we're also on Twitter at filmscene1. And if you have a minute, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, too. Until next time, I'm Tim.
I'm Karen.
And thanks for listening.